Come on, Glenn. Let us put our differences aside. No more nitpicking. Let's do this song together, okay?
Okay, Artie. I'll try my best. I have no rhythm.
Don't underestimate yourself, Glenn. Here we go. They call me Cuban Beat. I'm the king of the rumba beat. When I play my maracas, I go chick-chicky-boom, chick-chicky-boom. Yes, sir, I'm Cuban Beat. Artie Coro is my name. And I go and I dance and I chick-chicky-boom, chicky-boom, chicky-boom. Glenn, to you.
Okay. I'm excited. It's true. With Artie Coro, we are one but two. We have our differences, but it doesn't matter. We all care about the same thing. I'm Mr. Glenn Hauser, and Artie Coro's my thing.
Ha! You see, Glenn, it is very simple. Yeah! Chicky-boom, chicky-boom, chicky-boom. Boom, chicky-boom, chicky-boom, ba-boom, boom, ba-doom. My name is Artie Coro. I'm your friend in Havana. My name is Artie Coro. Charlie Oscar 2 Kilo Kilo. Ha-ha!
Artie, should be my turn next. I really want to sing another part of the song. I'm getting very excited. Let's cha-cha. Oh-ho. Ha-ha. Yes, oh yes. Ha-ha. Hee-hee. Ho-ho. Ha-ha-ha.
Okay, Glenn, let's just swing it. Ha-ha-ha. Chicky-boom, 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 chicky-boom.
And there we had it. Artie Coro, host of DXers Unlimited on Radio Havana, Cuba, with Glenn Hauser, host of World of Radio, singing a duet together. Ah, yes. The joy and magic that must have been in the studio at the time. I think that we should get Artie. Hola, Artie. I know that you listen to this program because you think that I'm a member of the CIA. But guess what? I can't tell you. But that's a whole other kettle of fish. But anyway, a message, by the way, Artie. Oh, yes, by the way, I really forgot to read this out, Artie. This is a piece of paper that was just handed to me, and I have to read this for you right now. The numbers are 6-3-5-5-2-1-1. Okay, that's the secret coded message, especially for you, Mr. Artie Coro, Charlie Oscar 2 Kilo Kilo. Considering that Artie Paulette thinks that I'm a member of like a spy agency, I mean, I don't know.
I'm not getting involved in this.
Well, aren't you former KGB?
Oh, yeah, right, of course. Yeah, no. I've been watched by the KGB, but.
And they watched you, and, you know, it was a funny story. A woman that I met many years ago, she is actually from the city of St. Petersburg. And during the Cold War, her family was watched heavily by the KGB because they were involved in some dissident movements. Mm-hmm. And she told me the funniest story. She told me the funniest story. They went to East Germany in the 1980s, the whole family. So the KGB wasn't following them. It was the East German secret police. So what they did, she said, she found out after the collapse of the Berlin Wall that the Stasi actually stopped watching her family.
Oh?
You know what happened? Because after the fall of the Berlin Wall, anybody who... If you knew that you were followed, you can actually find your records to find out why they were following you. Well, the reason was they stopped following her because their grandmother, who at the time was well past 85, used to walk around the apartment in the nude.
Okay.
And the Stasi agents who were across the street with the binoculars didn't want to look anymore.
Smart. Very, very smart.
Can you picture the conversation? Oh, Hendrik. Oh, no. I believe in world socialism, but oh, this is going too far. This is very going too far.
They say everyone has a price, I guess. That kind of has the opposite effect when it comes to idealism.
Yes, it does. Also coming up this hour, by the way, Poet, you just scooped a coup for us. You got an exclusive interview with one of the most secretive groups out there.
I know. I don't know how that happened. Of course, I had a little bit of help, but I can't tell you who because I just can't.
That's right. We can't tell you because they're anonymous.
Exactly.
We're going to keep it anonymous for now.
Yes.
But we'll tell you a little bit later on. And also, Paulette, before we were doing the show, you told me something really funny because Ukraine just had their elections and you said something strange happened with Viktor Yanukovych.
Well, something strange always happens with Viktor Yanukovych over and above the election, the way they were pretty much arranged so that he could win. It is a democratic country, but, you know, these things happen. At any rate, he was so happy about how things turned out that he actually broke out into song. And it got recorded.
Hello, my friends, I'm Viktor Yanukovych. I am the president of Ukraine. People all support me. Yes, it's true. Do not believe the press. But some people, like my wife, thinks I'm a pain. Those is the days, my friend. It's true, they'll never end. People love me because I am so tough. I'm honest as can be. You cannot corrupt me. I'm honest president of Ukraine. Lie, lie, I never lie. Lie, lie, I never lie. Lie, 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 lie. Lie, lie, I never lie. I've got a very good friend. He is in Moscow. He's a very good friend. He says, do you want to support me with what I do? We sign a new gas deal that make you rich now. Just like some people said happened to Yuria too. Lie, lie, I never lie. These are the days, my friend. I'm so happy, 'cause I am getting rich. Screw you, European Union. I don't care what you do. Vladimir's going to believe in me. He believes in me. He's going to give me money. Yeah. Lie, 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 lie. I never lie. No, I'm very, very honest. Very, very, very honest. It is true, duh. Some people say that I am very stupid. That is totally insane. I am very, very smart. I know what 1 million rubles can buy. Oh, it is very true. Well, maybe a quart of milk and some pierogi too. Hmm? I'm not sure with the exchange rate now. Oi. Lie, 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 lie. I never, never lie. I'm honest as can be because I am so tough. People, they don't like me, but I tell them, who cares? I don't care. Really, I really don't care. Lie, 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 let's dance. Okay, let me tell you something about running a country. It is certainly no picnic. It is really, really no picnic. If it was not for my friend Vladimir Putin in Moscow, this whole Yulia Tymoshenko affair would have made me very, very depressed. But I look at it this way. She signed a gas deal. Apparently she got rich, but we cannot find the money. Well, I think I'm going to go do the same thing. Because Vladimir came to me and he said, look, Viktor, we want to build pipeline. We're going to sell gas price. You get 40%, other 60% for me. To be honest, I think that is very good deal between Russia and Ukraine. Ukraine get 40, Russia gets 60. If newspaper editors do not like it, I'm going to have them shot. Shot? Wait a minute, did I say shot? No. I do not mean shot. We are going to have a fair trial. A very, very fair trial. And I will not get involved. I will stay at arm's length. I do not want to get involved in any more trials. Any more trials. No. I have never been involved in any trial. Even Yulia's. Even the fact that I went and had dinner with the judge. No, I did not have dinner with the judge. No. My press agent says no. I did not have dinner with the judge. It was with the police. No. Who did I have dinner with? Oh, the prostitute. Oh, did I say prostitute? No. It is a Spanish word, meaning Spaniard in Ukraine, I think. Oh, boy. Listen, I've got to get running now. My wife is waiting for me at home. She is making some very, very exciting dinner because we are going on a very nice holiday tomorrow. Bye.
Well, there we go, poet. Viktor Yanukovych singing. I wonder if he's going to record an album.
I certainly hope not.
It's amazing. I mean, some of the lyrics like, lie, 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 I never lie.
Maybe he never lies on a sidewalk. Doesn't mean he doesn't lie like one. Yeah. Oh, I hope, if he records an album, I'm probably going to be obligated to play it on Nash Holos, and I really don't want to do that. My listeners will not be happy with me.
I think make a funny video to it or something. Make it go viral.
Yeah, there we go. We'll give that a try.
You know, like Yanukovych secretly escapes to North America and is working as a hooter. His new name is Beatrice. I don't know where that came from.
I don't know
really
either,
no
Keith.
Idea.
Wherever all your stuff comes from. the mad file.
Okay, you are listening to The Happy Station Show, the special edition for December 31st, the end of the year. And we're actually, just in, I think, 45 minutes or so, we're going to be coming up to the new year. But we have some other things that we need to get to before the top of the hour. Now, earlier this year, I discovered that David Monson, the well-known broadcaster from the foreign radio, the Belgian foreign radio service, and also a number of other stations, who co-hosted with me in 2009, the final program that we did for the end of the year, had passed away. Now, it wasn't like he had passed away and then we found out about it a day later or a few days later. No, months had gone by. And a lot of people would say, well, that sounds very strange. But David was the kind of guy you could write an email to. You don't hear anything. And then 2 years later, he says, oh, sorry for taking so long to respond back. After you've totally forgotten anything that you wrote to him about. And you know, the funny thing, Paulette, when he was here with me in 2009 and we did that 2 hours, right? Mm-hmm. I remember in a span of less than 5 minutes, he had changed subject about 12 times.
Sounds like a character.
And then went back to what he was originally talking about, but I'd forgotten what he was talking about because I was trying to keep up with him. Anyway, when we found out that he had passed away, I contacted two other people who are no strangers to our listeners, Bob Zanotti and Jeff White, who also have very fond memories of David. And this is what we have for you right now.
Well, hopefully so, because you know I might be something of a sexagenarian now myself. Yeah, forget about the prefix, but genarian, sexagenarian myself. Can you believe it? I mean, gee, my gosh, where have all those years gone? I mean, we all end up saying that, but you know, I feel more alive and younger than I've ever felt, possibly.
Maybe some of you have lived through or with, at some stage of your life, that sound, the sound of an erupting volcano. In Italy, Mount Etna appears to be building up a head of steam again, belching black smoke into the air and rumbling like a subway tunnel. The last eruption of Mount Etna was in March last year, and experts say it's still too early to determine whether she'll blow it up again. A report from Winston Lawton.
I'm standing where others lie. Many thousands of young men, many younger than myself when they fell, in what they said would be the war to end all wars. I'm standing in Flanders Fields.
I've got another work by Brahms to play too in the program. Not exactly light classical music,
but a magnificent piece of oratorio that somewhere in the course of the program I'll find a suitable place to slot in. It just seems, though, that somehow, today, there's a definite tendency in my selection towards the waltz, the march, and the dance.
The most treasured memories of my life, in fact, were the years that I spent in London and being exposed to, of course, you know, the National Theatre, the Royal Shakespeare Theatre, and indeed I had interviews and even met up with, at one time, right here, isn't it amazing, in Taiwan, with one of the big names, in fact, in the Royal Shakespeare Company.
Jeff, let me begin with you, because David gave me some tapes of a program that he did in South Africa called the Tuesday at 8. And one of them contains you calling in from Chicago doing a report about a snowstorm. How did you meet David? Because David was in South Africa at the time. You were in the United States. How did you meet him? Did he just call you up out of the blue and say, yes, you've got to come on the show. Talk about the snowstorm.
I really don't remember how I first met him, except that I think I probably, you know, I mean, I was a shortwave listener, and I probably heard his program, Brussels Calling. Now, we did, and Bob knows this, David was a partner in an enterprise that we had called Radio Earth that I was also involved in. And I remember when I was in Curacao producing this, it was a daily one-hour program, David was doing commentaries from Belgium at the time, and he happened to find a payphone in Brussels that would make international calls without needing money. And so he would just call us up in Curacao every day and feed the commentary. But I also had traveled to Europe a few times and worked with David on planning some various projects, and we went to some EDXC, European DX Council conferences together as well.
Bob, let's get to you. Your connection with David Monson, how did you meet him?
A very similar answer to that our good friend Jeff just said. I'm not completely sure anymore, but I know it had something to do, pardon me, with a European DX Council meeting. And I don't keep book on it, but if my recollection is correct, it would be the late 70s when we actually were in Brussels. And I think David showed up at that particular time. And then there was another occasion, which is almost legendary. Ian McFarlane will remember this because Ian and I did joint reports about it. RCI and SRI, the two communications programs, worked together very often. And that was in Berlin in the spring of 1989, actually just a few months before the fall of the Berlin Wall. And that was the occasion when David initiated the idea for International Radio Days, he called it. And this was meant to be a big meeting of major shortwave broadcasters to meet with the public and to try to explain and bring their message of international broadcasting to the public. And that brought us to Berlin, and that was the second meeting. On a very official and professional level, I never had that much to do with David. My contacts with him were mainly later on when he came to visit us here in the Emmental. He would call suddenly out of nowhere. You'd get a call from David saying, I'm in Europe, but I'll save those details for you later.
My meeting, David, of course, was thanks to the two of you. And even though I didn't know him as long as the two of you, he was, as far as I'm concerned, and I think he would be flattered if I said this, but I mean, there's no doubt about it, David was eccentric. David was very eccentric. And I recall a time in 2010 when I did a sit-down interview with him that was probably the most extraordinary interview that I've ever done with anyone, because it ran nearly 2 hours. And when I was editing the interview, I constantly had to edit out my voice saying, okay, David, good topic, but let's get back on to my original question. He'd start answering it and then go off in a completely different direction. And then I'd always have to like, okay, David, let's get back to the original question again.
That was typical, Keith. I think we all had that experience with him. Some people would call him, or might have called him, scatterbrained, and you mentioned eccentric. But you know, it's interesting. We all knew him, and I knew him fairly well because I can go into details later if you wish. He was here, and we had some really quiet, deep moments in long, late-night discussions. And this word eccentric, there's nothing wrong with that. But you know, in technical terms, in physics, anything which is eccentric is sort of out of the box. It's not in conformity, I should say, with the norm or the standard. Now, if you look at it one way, that could be an apt definition of creativity. And David was extremely creative, and it manifested as what people might call eccentric. Also, this notion of being a bit scatterbrained in his thoughts all over the page and so on. And this, of course, can also be the mark of a highly creative individual. The problem there is that he was not able to focus his thoughts, as you've said. I mean, he'd have, I guess they call it stream of consciousness in psychology. Anything that popped into his head, it simply grabbed him and he went off in that tangents all over the place. But his mind was never quiet. His mind was always working. I don't know if he ever really slept or rested. He was just a bundle of energy. I mean, a volcano of energy. And everything was in his mind. Everything was in his mind. His mind was never quiet. That's one way I would characterize David Monson.
You see, his mind was always going in various different directions at the same time. And it was always ahead of his, you know, his body, although he physically moved fast as well. And so he'd start out, he'd be doing a live, you know, commentary on the radio, and he'd start out talking about, you know, some aspect of architecture in Belgium, and he'd end up talking about eating 10 hamburgers at McDonald's or something. And it was, it was very interesting. And it was, and he had a hard time. You know, from what Bob said is correct. He was very, very creative and had a hard time accepting the concept of a dry script for a radio program. So what he would do, he was required to do that at Brussels Calling, but he would often record the program, you know, based on the official script in the daytime. And then after the editors went home in the evening, he would go back and go into the studio, and he had a good relationship with the studio operators, and he would go on live and do the program live, a totally different program from what had been pre-recorded with the script. But it was, and it was stream of consciousness programming, exactly. But you know, people liked that, particularly in North America and somewhat in Europe. I think it was very different from what was on most state-owned shortwave stations at the time.
It's amazing, you know, what I can see from my window, from our studio window. I'd feel rather like Bartleby in Herman Melville's short story. You remember him staring out at a blank wall? Well, I'd feel rather like Bartleby if it wasn't for the fact that the wall on the opposite side of my studio happens to contain floor upon floor there. There are 11 of them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 1911, yes. Floor upon directors on the 10th or 11th floor, not quite sure. Perhaps he spends his life gazing down in my window. Now, floor upon floor of those asymmetrical windows. Now, it's not the asymmetry of the windows that interests me. It's the goings-on behind the windows that does, and I'm not sure sometimes whether the occupants of the offices they give light to realize that somewhere on the opposite side of the building, the eyes of a voyeur are at work, a peeping Tom at his dirty work. This could also end up sounding like the first chapter of a novel by a French existentialist. Ever heard of Babus? I was always fascinated by that first chapter of L'Enfer, that's what it is, right? Hell, where the principal character is found almost on the first page, I think, peeping through a hole in the wall, or was it a keyhole? And he was peeping through the hole at his neighbors in the hotel room next door.
If you want to know what they were up to, well, read the book. What's so wrong with wanting to know what the neighbors are doing, anyhow? Everybody wants to know what I'm doing. I mean, my neighbors, that is, my street. I'm treading on dangerous ground now, but I'm almost sure that... Oh, would you believe it? There they go again. Barbus's hero. Almost sure that Barbus's hero or anti-hero would have found as much delight in his unnatural pastime by working for the radio station. This radio station. Now, this has left you all guessing, I suppose. I'm sure you'd give anything to find out what was actually going on right now in our studio. You can only hear my voice, and I'll vouchsafe for the fact that I'm proper enough, but you should see how the rest of them carry on here when I'm on the air. Sodom and Gomorrah had nothing on our studios. You can believe me if you wish. To get back to the window. And by the way, this is the first chapter of an existential novel I'm writing. Getting back to the windows, then, and what I can see in the windows opposite our studio. Right at this moment of time, what looks like a young blonde combing her long blonde hair, her one or two long blonde hairs. In a moment she'll be laying on the lipstick. Yes, that's exactly what I thought. Yes, a touch of rouge to the right and the left cheek, a dab of powder to the brow, quick squirt of whatever deodorant to below the right and left ear. She stands back to admire her handiwork, deodorant to the right or left ear, under her arm. She stands back to admire her handiwork. She gives herself a kiss in the mirror and gets lost once again in her handbag, no doubt searching for the nail polish. I wonder what director she's going out with tonight.
Jeff, that leads me to the question, because in the 1980s, there was an album, vinyl, a disc that was released of some of the best excerpts from Brussels Calling. You were involved in that project. How did that manifest?
Well, David had the idea. I think it was, I'm not sure if he was still at Belgian Radio Intelligence at the time or not, but he had those tapes of some of the mailbag programs and what he called his mobile monologues, which were these sort of stream of consciousness programs. And he picked out some of the best of them and talked about, you know, he said, do you think it would be a good idea to do an LP of these? And then we could give the profits to the handicapped aid program in North America. And so Ian McFarland became involved in this also. He was head of handicapped aid program in Canada. And so, I don't know, David ended up making arrangements with a studio in Nashville, Tennessee, which produces most of the records here in the U.S., I think. And I handled some of the distribution and organizational matters on that. It was Mail and Mobile Monologues was the title of the LP.
You know, I've listened to it, and something that you mentioned a moment ago, it was very different from what most, let's say, state publicly funded international broadcasters were doing at the time. And you listen to it, and you kind of wonder, because in many ways, these, when David was at Belgian Radio doing Brussels Calling, it really brought, I would suspect, a lot more listeners, a lot of people thinking, oh, this is like a breath of fresh air. And the odd thing is that he never really had support from Belgian Radio doing this.
He did have a kind of a constant love and hate relationship with the BRT. And eventually, you know, he left because I don't think he could handle the situation there. I mean, like I said, he found ways of getting around the bureaucracy there by doing things his own way, such as going back in at night and doing the programs live. But, you know, they had lists up, for example, of how many times an announcer would mention a product name or say God bless at the end of a program or something like that, and things that David would do, and they put them up on the wall, you know, to sort of make people look bad. And, you know, he didn't, you know, this wasn't the sort of thing that he liked, of course, but he grinned and buried it for many years before he left.
Well, this issue of his relationship, not only to Belgian radio, but also to Belgium, it was, I have to be careful here, but I don't know. We had hours of late night discussion, and he gave me the clear impression that he really wasn't happy in Belgium at all. In fact, he used a couple of expressions we can't use here on the air. But he wasn't terribly happy. I think, though, in all fairness, he was one of these wandering souls who probably was never happy anywhere. In fact, I'll confess, I'm a little bit like that. It just has to do with my being a Sagittarian or something, whatever that is. I've been told that anyway by the experts. And in David's case, he was definitely a citizen of the world, and he was very deep and very intelligent. And he also was very critical. He was not politically correct. I'm not either, but he certainly wasn't. And I think his attitude towards the radio station there was, don't get me wrong, don't take me literally, but in a way it was almost devil may care, almost a suicidal attitude. He was not a corporate politician. I think he somehow, this is speculation, but I always had the feeling he regarded the radio station up there in Brussels as somehow his own personal radio station. And he was going to push the envelope, as people say today, and see how far he could get away with it. Or he just never thought about it or never cared. There are some people like this who are, you know, we know them in corporations, in business. There are these people who we call them organizational politicians. You know, there are other expressions which are less flattering. David was anything but that. He was a seeker of the truth. He explained things or commented on things as a social critic and observer the way he felt it, the way he saw it. And I don't think the term censorship and certainly self-censorship would ever have occurred to him. And to be honest, I was surprised sometimes that he got away with what he did. Certainly, you couldn't have done that kind of thing on a station like Swiss Radio International or most other stations I can think of, certainly not Radio Canada International. And yet, he in a way, he pushed the envelope to extremes, and he got away with it for quite some time. But I think it was a kind of ventilation. The internet today, I mean, he could have his own radio station. In those days, you couldn't. I think today he would be a great success on the internet, and he'd be very happy doing that. But in those days, you only had one outlet to the world, and that was shortwave. And I think that's the medium he was using to try to address people and talk to the world about his ideas and how he saw the world.
I would venture to say that, you know, in a way, BRT and Brussels Calling was perhaps even more effective in presenting Belgium to the world because of David's format, or lack of format, if you will. I mean, he was a wealth of knowledge about things like classical music and the history of Belgium. And I mean, he loved Europe and this sort of thing. And he could talk about it. He could talk about it in a personal way, which was very different, you know, from these scripts that were prepared by most stations. And I think in many ways the program was more effective and perhaps a better way of presenting Belgium than the traditional way.
Hello, hello, France.
Hello, David.
Hello, Paul. Okay, you can hear me down there, can
yes,
you?
Yes, we can hear
on
you.
On the Kurmacht, all right.
Okay.
Up here, that's me, yours truly, David Monson, on the tower of the Gravenstein. My gosh, if I have to climb another step today, or for that matter, climb down another step, I shall die on the spot, I swear. Anyhow, there's our technicians down there in the mobile studio on the Kurmacht, and they've done a remarkable job of work. I can assure you, if they don't get a gold medal after all this, after their efforts over the past couple of days, well, we'll certainly make sure that you get the freedom of this city. I've spoken to the mayor about that, Paul, in France. And
before we end off, I want to ask each of you to share some anecdote about David that you will certainly never forget. Who's going to go first?
Oh, well, I remember the very first time that I went to Europe. It was in 1981. And I was actually going, remember, Bob, you all sponsored the European DX Council conference there in Bern.
And that's right.
I was going to that, but I flew into Luxembourg, on Iceland there, and I was going to stay for a few days with David in Brussels. And he picked me up. He said he was going to pick me up at the airport in Luxembourg. I got to the airport, and I was waiting in the customs and immigration lines, and they called my name on the loudspeaker. And so I got out of line. I went to an Iceland Air representative, and I said they called my name on the PA. And they said, yes, you have a message from Mr. David Monson. He says he is going to be delayed, but he will be there to pick you up, so wait for him. So I did. And sure enough, in a little bit, David arrived, and we were putting my luggage into his Mazda RX-7. And he explained that he was delayed because he had been in Brussels, and in a parking space, he backed into a car belonging to one of the African ambassadors to Belgium. And so he was tied up with the paperwork and the police reports and so on. So he was late picking me up, and then he said, the problem is I have to get back to Brussels in time to do Brussels calling live. So we raced back to Brussels from Luxembourg at about 160, 180 kilometers an hour, weaving in and out of traffic. I mean, David was like, you know, a race car driver. And we got into Brussels, whipped into the underground parking garage at the BRT building, ran up a few flights of stairs, dashed into the studio, and I mean, he had it timed perfectly. The pre-recorded newscast was just ending, and he went into the studio, sat down, they turned his microphone on, he motioned for me to come into the studio, and he said, welcome to Brussels Calling here on Belgian Radio and Television. I'm David Monson, and I have a guest with me here tonight. Jeff White has just arrived from the United States. Jeff, what do you think of Belgium? And I, you know, this is the first time I'd ever been to Europe, first time I'd ever been to Belgium, and I'd only been there for, you know, an hour or two. And I didn't know whether it was a joke or whether he was serious. And so I just said, well, David, it's kind of hard to see Belgium at 200 kilometers an hour. So, but this is the kind of programs he did, you know.
Well, I don't have anything that will top that, Jeff, but I have a couple of maybe contrasting recollections or maybe things you'll remember, too. I remember at one affair, David had, I think he was going to entertain us with a piano recital. He was quite an accomplished pianist. Also, Dante, his son, which is one of the reasons that David wanted to move to Germany so he could have a better musical education. And, you know, he put on a recital of, I think, Beethoven or something, you know, very staid and very standard. Then all of a sudden, I said, I will now improvise. Well, he went on. For me, it was a cacophony. And it was the oral version, the acoustic version of David's mind. It was all over the place. I mean, he literally, to try to give a vivid picture, he probably would be anybody's classic vision of the mad musician. His long hair flying, his head twisting and back and forth and jerking and all kinds of movements. And it was just, I mean, I wish somebody had recorded it. It was the acoustic rendition of David Monson's mind.
Jeff White, Bob Zanotti, thank you very much for joining us today on this program looking at David Monson, who we just discovered passed away March 2011. And we only found out about it last week, but as I mentioned earlier, if you didn't get a reply from an email that you sent, it wasn't unusual. Jeff White, Bob Zanotti, thank you very much.
Thank you, Keith.
Thank you, Keith. It's been fun thinking and remembering back to some of the good times with David Monson. He'll surely be missed.
It's Beethoven's Sonata number 3 in A major. Oh, you want to be really, you know, musical about it? Okay, opus, academic about it, opus 69. It's a sonata for cello and piano, forte piano and cello. I'm going to play you the Scherzo Allegro Molto, and it's one of the most contagious, I think, versions and performances of this particular work that I've ever heard. Again, with Anna Bilsma, the Dutch cellist, and on forte piano, Malcolm Bilson. I'll tell you a little more about this afterwards, if we have time. Thank you.
And there we go, our little tribute to broadcaster David Monson. You're listening to Happy Station. Now, Paulette, you have an exclusive interview right now.
Yes, I do. And it's very interesting. Over the past year, Anonymous has been taking on the establishment with all kinds of mischief, hacking corporate and government websites, causing problems for all kinds of users. When it comes to espionage, including corporate espionage, some have been pointing the finger at governments like China, Iran, and North Korea. But we have just discovered that the real culprit is Anonymous, a claim the group denies. Joining us now at an undisclosed location is the president of Anonymous. We cannot tell you his name, and he'll be speaking to us through a voice synthesizer. So, hello, Mr. President.
Hello. We are Anonymous. We
have problems
with
everyone.
Well, could you respond to the claims made by some people that you're really behind the attacks against U.S. government websites?
Garble, garble, Google, Google, lip, 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 lip. We are Anonymous. Lum, 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 lum. Pilip, pilip, pilip.
I'm sorry, could you say that again?
Garble, garble, Google, Google.
Lip, 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 lip.
We are Anonymous.
Pilip, pilip, pilip.
Okay, well, we'll get back to you shortly after you resolve the problems you're having with your synthesizer. In the meantime, I would like to introduce Noah Moniker, a student from the University of New York. Noah has been leading a group of students to protest against Wall Street in a movement called 99%. So, Noah, what exactly is it that your movement wants?
Well, you know, it's like this, you know, I think that, like, you know, I think university should be free because, like, you know, the kind of movement that you know, we're having, you know, in the parks and everything, I mean, it's like, you know, a real bowel movement of society, you know, I mean, people, you know, complain and that's what we're doing. So it's like a real bowel movement. Because, like, you know, I think, like, education, you know, has to go through all of us. And I really think that, you know, education, you know, should be free. I mean, we have our bowel movements for free.
Yes. Well, but there are people in other parts of the world who pay a lot more for their education.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's tough cookies. I mean, you know, they work a lot harder than we do. You know, I just want to graduate, you know, and get my degree and work, you know, a 15-hour week and the kind of job, you know, that I can't get fired from, you know. Power to the workers.
You've been supporting the 99%. Is this something that is close to your heart?
We are Anonymous.
It is close, but it is close, like a bowel movement. Like your guest was just saying, we are strong and we know what we're doing.
Now, Noah, how do you feel about what Anonymous said, that they're looking for world domination and are happy to deal with what some in the media consider prats, such as yourself, who are easy to manipulate?
Well, you know, like, I don't think that's true. I really think, you know, they have their, you know, our interests at heart. And you know what? If they think that they can take the same, you know, like, activities that these big corporations are taking, oppressing the workers, I mean, we'll just do the same thing against them. Yeah.
And how are you going to do that?
That's when we start the 89% movement.
89?
Yeah, 89% movement. And then if they continue, we go down to, you know, 79% movement. And then, of course, the favorite movement of all, because that's what we're involved with, you know, in all our park sittings, you know, the 69% movement.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for...
You know, the communist bookstores?
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And?
That's it. Just communist bookstores. Right on.
Okay. Well, thanks so much to the members who...
Oh, also, I forgot, like, you know, the free sex in the park and giving away prophylactics. Yeah, cool. Right on. Fight for the workers.
Groovy. Thanks to the members who kindly agreed to give us that insightful look at Anonymous. Now for a public service announcement from Anonymous.
Yeah, we promise to bring world domination, and we will go after every capitalist Schweinhund who is trying to destroy this movement, a movement which started in the bowels of the people. We will have the control of everything, and you, that 1% who are not giving our workers a fair shake, will feel the thing that are fished. We will publish your phone numbers, we will publish your email, we will publish your bank accounts, and you will feel the fist of Anonymous. Du nennst Schweinhund und zerstrieben von Deutschland, der das schneller als der Steiner und das schöner von der Nacht hat. Sieben, acht und von Sender, Hänsen, Hunden, Anonymous, 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 Anonymous.
And there we had it, Paulette's exclusive interview with the head of Anonymous and one of the organizers of the Occupy Wall Street movement. Now, in a few moments here on Happy Station, we're going to be welcoming in the new year for listeners in North America, Central America, and the Caribbean. And by the way, we are broadcasting on a frequency of 9,955 kilohertz right until 6 hours UTC. Before we do that, Paulette, you have one more song for this hour.
I do, and I'd like to dedicate it to you. This one always makes me think of you whenever I hear it. The group is Steeler's Wheel, and the title of the song is Stuck in the Middle with You.
I fall off my chair, and I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs.
call the PCJ answer line at country code 44-20-3286-1399. That's country code 44-20-3286-1399 and leave your comments and questions. On shortwave, satellite, and the internet, this is PCJ Radio. This is PCJ Radio on 88.2 FM. This is PCJ Radio on 107.5 FM in Nairobi, Kenya. And nationwide on 5. This is PCJ Radio on KBCT in Waco, Texas. This is PCJ Radio on 9955 kilohertz to Latin America. This is PCJ Radio on 7590 kilohertz DRM. On shortwave, satellite, and the internet, this is PCJ Radio. This is Bob Zanotti. Do you miss Swiss Radio International? If so, I invite you to visit my website, SwitzerlandInSound.com. Colorful and informative radio features about Switzerland, its destinations, interesting people, politics, culture, and even the two Bobs. SwitzerlandInSound.com, where English language radio from Switzerland lives on.
Hi, I'm Peter Anthony Holder, and I would like you to join me for a very eclectic and different kind of radio show. It's called the Stuff File Program. Where else would you get to hear a well-renowned Hollywood acting teacher, a best-selling science fiction writer, a guy who teaches llamas how to be golf caddies, or the man who has Hitler's toilet, all wrapped up with some of the oddest news stories around? It's a rhetorical question. There's only one place. The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. There are various ways to catch the show. You can find it at my website at peteranthonyholder.com. Check out my blog at peteranthonyholder.blogspot.com. Find it at cyberstationusa.com, radioforall.net, or simply subscribe to it on iTunes. You've forgotten all those places already, haven't you? Okay, just Google the title. It's called the Stuff File Program, and stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. Catch it, enjoy it, and have a chuckle or two. The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Radio will never be the same again.
You can hear PCJ Radio while on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is a free news, talk, and entertainment mobile app available for your smartphone. Downloading is quick and easy. Just find Stitcher from the App Store. Then, during registration, hit the promo code box and enter PCJ to get automatically entered to win $100. For more information, go to www.pcjmedia.com and click on the Stitcher logo on the right menu. PCJ Radio on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio.
And you're listening to a special four-hour edition of the Happy Station Show, broadcasting to listeners in North, Central, and the Caribbean. That's North America and South America, in case you didn't realize that, on 9,955 kilohertz. This is sort of a tradition that we started in 2009, but so far to this date, this is the longest special that we've done because it is an entire 4 hours. And if you want to hear the whole thing again and all the silliness that we've had going on for the past 3 hours so far, you can find it at our website, www.pcjmedia.com. Now, in North America, because Paulette, you are on the west coast of North America.
That's right.
And you are you 3 or 4 hours time difference now from to the east coast?
Three. It's always three.
You're always 3 hours. So you're going to be having your countdown in about 3 hours time from now.
Mm-hmm.
But if I look at the old clock on the wall, because it's coming up to 5 hours UTC, I think that both of us have to get ready in a few seconds to wish those on the East Coast and parts of the Caribbean and parts of Central and Latin America Happy New Year. So are you ready to go? We have a couple of seconds to go. Are you ready?
Absolutely ready.
All right. So we don't have a ball like in New York City, but I'm going to drop my pen, actually. When you hear the pen drop on the desk, you will know that it is New Year's. No, I have a better idea. That's better.
Perfect.
Okay, here we go. Okay, we have to start, I think, there we go, in 10.
9. 8.
8.
7.
7. Sounds like a parrot. 6. 5.